From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. It's Wednesday, June 15th. Here are today's headlines.
The prevalence of COVID-19 in Vermont is dropping, according to Commissioner of Health Dr. Mark Levine. During the governor's weekly media briefing yesterday, Levine said COVID-related hospitalizations are down in recent weeks.
Emergency visits with COVID-like illness are also decreasing, as are levels based on the wastewater surveillance data we are receiving.
Vermont's most recent COVID surveillance report showed a 35% decrease in new cases over the past week. So far this month, one Vermonter has died of COVID.
Meanwhile, the last of the state-run testing sites will shut down permanently by the end of next week. Levine said while the testing sites have been crucial in Vermont's effort to slow the spread of COVID, they're no longer necessary as at-home tests have become more common. Levine said tests are widely available at pharmacies and online, and Vermonters can order free tests from the feds by visiting COVID.gov.
And the long, long wait for COVID vaccines for children under 5 could finally be nearing an end. Levine said federal regulators are in the process of reviewing data from Pfizer and Moderna.
The information we have to date indicates the vaccines will get a favorable review for their efficacy and their safety, but we will await the final FDA decision.
If the vaccine gets emergency use authorization, Levine said children in Vermont could begin receiving their first shots as soon as next week. He said most shots will be given at pediatricians' offices and other healthcare practices.
And a compounding pharmacy in Colchester has agreed to stop producing certain drugs after signing an agreement with the U.S. Justice Department. Federal officials filed a complaint last month that alleged Edge Pharma in Colchester manufactured drugs in an environment that was not sufficiently sterile. An attorney for the company said they agreed to the consent decree but did not admit or deny the allegations. According to the Justice Department's complaint, between 2014 and 2021, federal inspectors found the company did not follow record-keeping rules, it did not have proper airflow in its facilities, and inspectors found the presence of mold species that can cause disease. The civil agreement requires Edge Pharma to take specific measures to fix the violations and demonstrate that they will comply with federal law.
Coming up, some people aren't able to live on their own, and their aging parents worry about the future. That story after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to Vita for their support. Vita, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit VEDA.org to start your next chapter.
If you're a parent, one of your main jobs is to teach your child to take care of themselves so they can eventually leave home. But what if you have a child with a developmental disability who won't be able to live on their own?
For many older Vermont parents in this situation, the worry about what will happen to their kids when they die is gut-wrenching. As our colleague Nina Keck reports, increased parental activism and a new law is giving many of them hope.
Alan Riley is 67 and lives in Moortown. Her adult son, Christopher, has Down syndrome, and Ellen says she and her husband worry constantly about what will happen to him when they're gone.
Who's going to take care of my child? Who's going to advocate for him? Who's going to make sure he has a fulfilled life, that he does his laundry, that he isn't out roaming the streets? How he can't live up on the mountainside with me the rest of his life. I'm going to get old.
40 miles west in Shelburne, Elizabeth Campbell bends down to help her son Jesse put on his sandals so he can go outside with their dog. Jesse is 24 and has an especially debilitating type of Down syndrome.
So everything has to be, I think of it as shepherding. I have to shepherd him. All right, Jess, time for breakfast. Okay, Jesse, finish your toast. Time to brush your teeth.
If the house caught on fire, she's not sure he'd know to go outside.
I cannot leave the house without a paid caregiver.
Campbell is 65. When her husband Bruce was alive, she says they were able to tag team. But Bruce died of cancer a year and a half ago. And Campbell says if something were to happen to her, Jesse would most likely end up in the state's shared living program. She likens it to adult foster care. And she says the thought of her son spending his life as a guest in a series of strangers' homes is unthinkable.
none of us would think of, if we still had our elderly parents, none of us would think, you know, if they had a little dementia, would think of putting them in adult foster care. We wouldn't do it. Why do we think that's a good idea for people like my son?
A little history here. For nearly 80 years, Vermonters with intellectual disabilities who were not able to live at home were cared for at a place called the Brandon Training School. More than 2,300 Vermonters cycled through it, and many lived there for decades. But institutionalized care went out of fashion, and in 1993, the Brandon Training School closed. In its place, the state began paying families to house and care for Vermonters like Jesse in the community. That care is paid for primarily with Medicaid and Social Security benefits. According to state officials, nearly 3,300 Vermonters received this type of community care last year. While shared living works well for some, Elizabeth Campbell says it doesn't work for people like her son, who needs stability and who can't speak up if they're being exploited.
This is a real concern for the parents in our group.
That group she mentioned is the Developmental Disabilities Housing Initiative. It formed last year, and she says it has about 90 members, mostly older parents like herself. The group has been pushing the state to create more long-term options for their kids, ones that provide stability and peer interaction at an affordable rate. Thanks in part to the group's efforts, Vermont lawmakers passed legislation this year that will help the state analyze different types of residential care models and develop best practices. The new law provides $500,000 in planning grants. It also requires the state to do more frequent quality control assessments on care at the state and local levels. Jennifer Garabedian is director of Vermont's Developmental Disability Division. She notes that many families are doing a good job caring for adults with disabilities, but there are gaps in the state system, many of which, she says, were made worse by the pandemic.
Yes, I think we need to explore other options. And while I don't think we need to abandon the current models that we have, let's also explore what else could be out there.
Elizabeth Campbell believes smaller group homes that provide a place to age in place with peers is what many parents are looking for.
When someone like my son leaves high school, they're living with their parents and they're very isolated. Jesse's either with me or his caregiver, who's a few years older than me. He is rarely with peers. I think he's a 24-year-old young man, and I think he's profoundly lonely. If he could live in a stable house with peers, I think the quality of his life would be wonderful.
She points to a residential care home in Hardwick called Heartbeat Life Sharing and one in Middlebury called Yellow House Community as potential models. Parents with the Developmental Disabilities Housing Initiative argue that such housing needs to be affordable and available in all parts of the state. A report the group just released analyzed and compared residential care programs in Vermont with ones in New Hampshire, Boston, Cape Cod, and Virginia to help the state as it develops new options. Ellen Riley says she and a group of parents from the Barrie-Montpelier area have already begun looking at potential sites to create a residential care home in their area. Funding remains daunting, and she admits any project will take years. But she says their efforts and passage of the new law have made her and many other parents more hopeful about their kids' future. For VPR News, I'm Nina Kack.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Peter Hirschfeld. And this is what is most likely two massive American toads calling in Norwich in late May. It was sent to us by Garrett Heaton.
You can send your wildlife recordings to thefrequency@vpr.org. Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.
How are we supposed to fix what we don't talk about? Welcome to Homegoings, a Vermont Public podcast that encourages fearless conversations about art and race.
It's like an extended family, and especially around homegoing time.
Join us for Homegoings, wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the NPR network.